starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. Living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching the crews, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello and welcome to Spinvilla and Friends. It is Monday, January 19th. 2015. This is Deanna Spingola broadcasting from the suburbs of Chicago. This radio program does not have any corporate sponsors. Therefore, we are free to discuss controversial topics that are not politically correct and those that will not be discussed on other radio programs. My website is spingola.com, where you will find information about my three books, the Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book 2 and 3. My new book will be coming out soon. It is entitled Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences. Please also visit the website of a friend and listener who has created and maintains the website, spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. All of the more recent audio files of my programs are at this site, including the audio files from RBN, the defunct American Free Press Network, and some of the specials, Spinvilla specials, and of course from this program. My Twitter account is twitter.com/DeannaSpinvilla. If you have questions, please call in to 646-787-1915, or you can also ask questions from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com, or via my email at comment@spingola.com. Our guest today is Mark R. Elsis, and yes, he is. This is a new program. You are not hearing a rerun of last Monday's program. We are doing part two. He has created this magnificent document, and it just needs more than one, and maybe even more than two, radio programs. And Mark and I were talking just before the program about some of the issues that I have on my main computer that I use quite a lot. It's very strange. I am unable in any browser to bring up the website that we are going to be discussing today, and that website is holocaustrevisionism.com, and it doesn't matter which browser I use, I get an error message, and but I can bring it up on this computer, my office computer. So anyway, welcome, Mark.
Well, thank you once again for having me back. It's quite interesting that what you just said, that you can't bring up this document in the land of free speech.
Indeed. Now, I did save it to my computer, and I have it saved downstairs on my computer as a PDF file. But as far as bringing up the website itself, it gives me a big error message in Opera and Internet Explorer. Anywhere I go, I get this big error message.
How interesting. It's, I just put it into Google, and it's ranked number 3. It fluctuates, I think, 3 or 4 or whatever, 5. But it's interesting. The first one is from Time magazine, and it's just like 2 paragraphs of debunking the Holocaust. But that's listed first. And they actually list, they mention Edgar Steele very briefly in this just 2 paragraphs of, I guess it's a whole bunch of things on from the 40th anniversary of the moon landing or something. I don't know. And it's just a bunch of conspiracy. So it's just literally two paragraphs, but yet it's number one in Google when I have, you know, 170 pages written on this subject and 1,000 source hotlines. And so there goes the status quo for trying to derail and try to get people to right away, you know, the first thing they see would be something that says, you know, don't go into this subject because it's these people are all crazy and off the wall and nuts and all that kind of thing. So it's what we're dealing with, you know, it shows once again what they're we're up against, in that they have to discredit us in such strange ways, and instead of once again debating us on the subject or having just an open discussion about it, you know, it's the only historical issue you cannot talk about in the 5,000-6,000 year history of our civilization. So I find it just enormously disheartening in a way, because, you know, I'm all for putting things on the table and openly discussing any subject there is to try to find the truth about it, and then, you know, and you can become enlightened with the truth. I mean, what are we here for? Is it just to be deceived? And it seems, you know, in every different aspect. I mean, you can bring up these what happened in Paris almost 2 weeks ago now, and it's the same kind of strangeness, you know, where you and they're getting every political piece of energy they can out of it, no matter what happened. And it very much looks like a false flag, but, you know, with all these different things that have happened, and, you know, leaving their information in their getaway car and
all the, right. I mean, that's very suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very suspicious. And, you know, and the video of I saw Paul Craig Roberts. I got to get his emails, and it was a German video of the hostage situation, the second one, you know, the hostage situation. And the guys seemed to be coming out, and they shot him like so many times. It's just, you know, and then the policeman who was supposed to be shot in the head, but there's no blood, and it's just, and the way that, you know, it's just that if you brought this up, I mean, here's, and you know, I tried to find out who owned that magazine, and I did a little digging. I didn't do an enormous amount, but I couldn't find out who owned it, because I suspected Jews owned it, and that they were just constantly provoking people, you know. And so this dual standard is what I'm saying, is that you have, you know, it's freedom of speech is fine and dandy if you're bashing Muslims and Muhammad and even Jesus and Mary, but if you dare try to do the same kind of political cartoons on Jews or Israel, then it's, yeah, it's
just forbidden.
Yeah, I mean, you see what happened. 54 people, there, 3 million people came out for free speech and all this, and then you know, that comedian over there, and 53 other people get arrested for freedom of speech. So I don't know how blatant you can get with hypocrisy, but they seem to be bringing it to new heights every day. And this story is the epitome of it, what we're going to, again, discuss today. It's just, and that's why, you know, I finally decided to start writing it 2.5 years ago on this subject, because it was just, it became laughable. And I don't like to sound, I don't know what the exact word is, but...
It's part of your brainwashing. We've all been brainwashed into believing this happened, and now when we use words like laughable and apply it to the Holocaust, we inherently feel guilty because we once believed it, and so it's inherent in us to feel oh gosh, these people die. Oh, it's laughable. It is See, it's hard. It's laughable. And I was thinking about this last night. I was thinking, okay, there were never, and we've talked about this last Monday, there were never 6 million Jews under German jurisdiction during the war.
Right.
So it's logistically
right.
impossible.
Yeah. Yes, it's at their zenith. It's, you know, under 4 million. And then on the flip side of that, as we discussed, which we'll be going over certain things that we did last week, of course, but it's, you know, you have the flip side of that, which is now 6 million have gone for claims on Germany.
Right. And there were more of them left over. There were more of them after the war than before the war.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work out when the addition and the totals and the census figures for every other ethnic group indicate a decrease in their numbers?
Yes. And they have a slight increase in their numbers from 33 to 40.
Yeah. How does that work?
It works. It's a funny math. And then they have to go back and change it, and which they did. But it still didn't add up. It's like 4.5 million less, supposedly, after they went in to change this. So it is laughable. That's what becomes laughable, because they go back and they change it, but they don't change it to -6 million.
Right.
They do it to like 4.6 million less or something. And so,
if they say, oh, it was 4.5 million, then are they Holocaust deniers? No, they're not. But we are, because we indicate that the numbers are, well, skewed, obviously very skewed.
Yeah, it's, the numbers have been all over the place from even Jewish historians. I mean, it's, they all don't stick to the 6 million number like they're supposed to. But
they didn't get the morning memo, obviously.
No. No, it's, I was going to begin with that the British broke the German Enigma Code, and Sir Frank H. Hensley, in his book, British Intelligence in the Second World War, Its Influence on Strategy and Operations, stated, and I quote, "The returns of Auschwitz mentioned illness as the main cause of death, but included references to shootings and hangings. There were no references to decrypts to gassings." So you have, once again, they have the British MI5 at Bletchley Park broke into the Enigma Code and got all of these messages that the commandants were sending back to Berlin, and they don't have any information about any so-called gassings.
Right.
There
were all the flyovers, and there's so much physical evidence against accepting the story. It's just amazing. And yet we have a preponderance of people, a majority of the people in this country believe that it happened simply because they've heard it so frequently. As Hitler said in his book, Mein Kampf, when referring to the Jews, he said, well, they use a tactic that they use repetitive lies. He wasn't talking about German propaganda. He was talking about Jewish tactics. Is that they simply repeat the lie so frequently that it becomes accepted as dogma.
Yes, and they've turned that around into
right.
saying it was their propaganda that's repeating itself.
Right.
Which
rejection.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's what seems to be a hallmark of these people, is that they just flip everything around. There's many unbelievable quotes from Hitler that I went over when I went over the whole document again when I put out the email Saturday night saying I was going to be on your show again for part two, and there's just so many great quotes from Hitler that and all these other people throughout all of our last 3,300 years of history talking about these people. It's just they seem to just change everything. I 15, 18 years ago, I believed the big lie was Germany. I believed the flip.
Sure, we
And
all did.
because it was such a big lie in and of itself that, you know, it made me go, oh, all right. And
Even if we thought about it, as we talked about last week, even when we thought about it, as a child, I thought, how could these people be so stupid as to just march into their death? Why didn't they, fight?
yeah,
I just couldn't understand how they could be so stupid.
yeah, that's it's interesting how both me and you thought the same thing as we when we were in our youth. I guess we had the questioning even then, where other people didn't have the questioning. They just, certain people just buy into it. And I'm not, everything that I do, I used to try to go around and talk to people and like enlighten all souls, I guess. And now I've come to the conclusion that there's only a certain amount of people that are open enough to listen to new information such as we're bringing forth here. And it's these people that, and it's always a small minority who can change things. And this is throughout history, this has happened. So you don't need to get, 51% of a democracy to change something. I believe you can use around 1% of people, and if they understand the truth completely, then it will resonate out from there, and then other people will get the truth, which is what, once again, we were alluding to last week that, like people like Bishop Williamson coming out and saying what he said, and then sort of not having anybody come out and inside his own church and
Support
back him
him.
up and
Yeah.
support him, and I know they did it behind the scenes, but not forthright. And to it's still, but there's, in all things there's a critical mass. And if like we were when we bring up all of these different things, that's why I have 50 sections in this piece that go into repudiating this story
Right.
that it happens. It's not one or two or three little holes in the story. This, and let us not forget that all the prior revisionists that I mean, there was absurd stories in the beginning. They made us into lampshades and shrunken heads and bars of soap.
Things
And
that
these.
are so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just it is, but it's there, and they made the Germans march into the camps and look at these, the German people. And I remember, I can't remember the whole story here, but that one of the people that were doing that was in the OSS. It was a it became a it wasn't Donovan. It was one of somebody else that was sort of in the black ops section.
Yeah,
That
there's
was
so many.
caught in one of these pictures that was setting up the table there in
Billy
Germany.
Wilder?
No,
Billy?
no, no,
No?
no. It wasn't a director. It was somebody in the OSS, and
Okay.
but anyway, it just goes to show that, here they can put out such outlandish stories, and they get people horrified that, how can these people not be telling you the truth? Look at the. You know, look at the lampshades, look at the soap, look at the
Sure.
shrunken heads, and it's
I interviewed somebody about cancer, and there was this fabulous, fabulous documentary that was available. I think it was Cut, Poison, and Burn. It was named that. And I thought, oh, everybody needs to see this. And so I called around to one particular church that seems to experience a lot of cancer. It's not the church that I go to, but it's one that somebody close to me goes to. That has all these people, their names are always in the bulletin. We're going to pray for this one and this one, this one. And so I called him. I said, I think that your parish or your group should see this film. And it would help them. And they wouldn't show it. And the reason I thought, okay, the reason they wouldn't show it is because there's probably doctors in that group of people who are making money off of chemotherapy or something else. And I thought, wow, there's always somebody that has an interest in keeping the lie going. And I think that's applicable to the Holocaust. There are people, and of course the Jews have a great interest in keeping the lie going. The whole Israeli state has an interest in keeping the lie going. But if you apply it to just a smaller group like the church, this one church group, and then I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could have a class or a seminar about herbology, showing people how they can put two things together, four things together, and they could cure something. Wouldn't it be wonderful to get together 300 or 400 people and show them how to do this? And then I thought, no, because in that group of 300 or 400 people, there's always going to be several people that have a financial interest or an emotional interest. So I think that's why you have to approach single people. You have to approach small groups of people or people who have critical thinking ability, that they are willing to say, yeah, I see what you're talking about. But trying to approach a whole group, even a whole group within the so-called truth movement,
yeah,
where you have KOLs, where you have key opinion leaders that say, oh, this was a hoax, or that was this way, and this is something else. And even in the so-called truth movement, you have people that will not do any critical thinking about a particular thing.
Yes, this is and people hold on to their beliefs, which they're very steadfastly in many respects, that they don't want to let go of what they think is true. And
sure.
And it's sort of this whole thing where we're sort of cannibalizing ourselves in almost all respects, is that it's not just monetarily, it's in almost every respect that we're being sold a bill of goods in just across the board in our life. And it seems to be, once you start digging into each little aspect, that it's, you know, once again, like the exact opposite of what is.
Sure.
Whether you talk about the cancer industry or the Holocaust or schooling or medicine in general or government or education, it's just every which way you look at, or the whole law system, and it's we've been brought up to, and it's, you know, even me, I'm just turned 57, and I was well educated, but it was still full of propaganda, unbelievable propaganda. Now that I look back on it in hindsight, that I know a lot of what real history is, and it's alarming. And but most people were, you know, now that in the last 50 years or so that they have strangled the middle class more and more, especially financially, but in every which way. I mean, with the fear of the war on drugs to put you in jail, and all different aspects of the fear-based society that they've created, and the slave society, the enslavement of debt, and, that and it feeds upon itself, and it's just it's getting, you know, incrementally, like I said, over the last 50 years, monetarily for the middle class, we've lost like at least 50% of our income, where now, in 68 or whatever it is, or 65, you could have a father being the sole source of the income, and the mother taking care of the children. And this has all changed. And with it goes the proper upbringing of children, and it's becoming a de-evolution and of decaying morals, because then who's overseeing the children is, you know, the TV or video games or what have you. And
right.
it's not the parent anymore that's doing it. So this feeds upon itself in like every which way. And I don't know if we're going to get out of it.
just like when my kids were growing up, you really monitored what they watched on television. We didn't have a television for 7 or 8 years. We decided when they were young, let's get rid of this thing. This is a terrible influence. And now the mother is outside of the home. She's working. You have latchkey kids that come home and they watch this horrible stuff on the internet. They play horrible, horrible, violent games, video games. And
yeah, which are coming more and more realistic. And,
oh yes,
and
used for training for warfare.
Exactly. Yes, it just desensitizes your soul.
It does.
I don't know how any parent allows their mostly overwhelmingly boys, but now girls are getting into it. But the violence of these games, it's just. Or you know, it's just beyond me.
It's Hollywood and the Pentagon who are collaborating to create these games so that when the child is 18 years old, whether you're a boy or a girl, then you can go and, well, there's no job, so you'll go into the military, and then you'll go out and kill a bunch of people because you've been brainwashed in the government schools that these people need to be destroyed, and you have the skills because you've been trained by the Pentagon
from day one. Yeah, it's the propaganda. I mean, you know, the Pentagon works hand in hand with the Jewish Hollywood people to make the films also.
Yes.
And it's interesting, you know, you go back to World War II and you have, you know, upwards of 70 million Gentiles killing themselves.
Yes.
And
killing each other
while the Jews, the international financiers, overwhelmingly Jewish, are reaping the profits, and they must be laughing hysterically at the stupid goyim. That
mm-hmm.
they keep on getting over on these people, and you know, this was hard for me to grasp, is that they actually think of us as cattle.
Oh yes, absolutely.
And we're like free ranging animals, and the only reason we're somewhat free ranging, I should say, animals, and the only reason we're given some leeway is because we produce better that way. If we were, you know, if it was more of an industrialized, if like you have with the animal agriculture mostly, they would do that. And
right.
So we're being manipulated on, you know, from even before you're born. The whole birthing.
Oh.
It's just the trauma of going through the whole birthing thing, and then the whole circumcision. It almost is like creating the monsters that they want to create psychologically, and
mm-hmm.
You know, it's when I learned about the whole circumcision thing, and I know we're going off topic, but it is
relative. I mean,
because it creates it you know,
submissiveness and pain and suffering.
Yeah, I mean, I'm one day old, and you're tearing apart my penis.
Yeah, I mean,
as if you know better than the creator.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the audacity of it for me. I mean, on many levels, it's just horrendously wrong. And they're lame excuses throughout the years and keeps changing of why it's good. But, you know, let me see, you were made this way, you know, and you're
right.
saying, oh, no, that's not the correct way. Just that in and of itself is just mind-blowing.
And then they sell it. They
yes,
nothing
yes,
goes
yes.
to waste, and their economically minded mentality. Well, they're gonna save everything. They're going to use everything, even if they have to put humanoids in soda pop. If you have too many aborted fetal tissue samples or whatever, then okay, put it in the food chain. And that's what they've done. I mean, it's pretty gross, but that is what they've done. And okay, let's put it in the vaccines too. We don't want to waste anything.
Yeah, it's or let's put the fluoride in the water, and let's put the radiation in the in the sludge in the soil, and sell it as ground soil. And
yeah,
it's just the whole feeding upon, and it's in like I was alluding to earlier. It's in every aspect. It's totally out of control, and yet here we are and I know you and I both are in many aspects. It's not just more or less exposing them, such in what we're talking about last week and this week, and this Holocaust revisionism. It's not just because some people perceive that as, oh, it's sort of negative and you and I are more solution orientated, and I know by your shows you put out extraordinarily good guests that put out excellent information on to help your body be the temple that it is,
and to make personal choices.
Yes, yeah, and to realize that we have the choice.
Right.
You know, this is real. I've been talking to different people about this. You know, we every moment that we're living in, it's called the present moment, and it is a present, and
right.
That we don't understand that it's literally a gift that
right.
We have, and that we have in each moment we have infinite possibility to do things.
Mm-hmm.
We can create whatever we want to create, and we that this is part of the reason the fluoride and the pineal gland and your they don't want you to understand the significance of who you are and what you can do and become and create and envision. And it's through the manipulativeness of these people too, and through the drugs in the system, whether it be legal drugs or illegal drugs, that they poison you with, and the food that they poison you with, and the chemtrails and the fluoride in the water and the gambling, and I mean they know the vices. It's the seven deadly sins. It goes back to
sure.
And if you can control the seven deadly sins, then you can control humanity. And so it's that, and of course you control the central banks of the world, and you can
and the resources.
Oh yeah, and the food, right? You
yeah.
can. It's and it's not just sometimes we hearken on the Jews and like we said last week, it's not all Jews, but it's an overwhelming majority of them that there's only in my eyes less than 5% that are I guess you could say morally good people, and very few of them will even those five will talk about what the rest of them are doing bad, but it's the people that they buy off, the really the international bankish Jews that they buy off, these Rumsfeld and Cheney types or whatever, and everybody along the way, but is bought out in some respect.
Right. It's like offering the local parish or the local church group, oh, do you want to see this movie on cancer? Because it would really help all the people in your group. And the top decision maker will think, oh, let's see, there's Dr. So-and-so, he's an oncologist, and they're going to say no, because they don't want to jeopardize
the money
contributions
and that's
that are
right.
coming in
and
from
the prestige
right.
of hanging out with the top oncologists at Sloan Kettering and blah blah blah
sure.
blah blah. Yeah, it just this is what I mean about sort of we're cannibalizing ourselves in so many different ways, and we're selling ourselves short and selling ourselves out. And and another thing that we have that is we have the choice, and where we spend our money. That's one of the few real choices we have left.
Right.
Where we spend our money. Like I myself, you know, I people laugh at me, but I wouldn't step foot in a Walmart. And it's just, it's one of my...
I don't shop in a Walmart.
Yeah. I would rather give somebody that owned the shop on Main Street, you know, $1.15 instead of going to Walmart and getting it for a dollar.
Right.
It's just because that person is, I can look at them in the eye and it's instead of, you know, people don't understand that, you know, the whole Walmart thing of this, it's just, they're unbelievably bad in so many ways, but they go in and they've killed everybody on Main Street and they suck all the money out of your neighborhood and bring it, you know.
And that's what they did. When I was traveling as a textile rep, I traveled in 5 states, and I kept seeing all of my independent customers, the fabric store owners, the little tiny mom-and-pop manufacturing concerns. They were all just kind of disappearing. The appliance store and all of these other independent stores were just disappearing as Walmarts began to dot all these little towns in Illinois and Missouri, and I'm thinking, my gosh, this is terrible. But then there were other people in my same business, people, you know, that did what I did, represented big textile manufacturers, most of whom were Jewish, in New York and in California. They were delighted to get a Walmart account. They would sell them the cheapest junk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also the quality of it and the slave labor and the offshoring of our jobs to, you know.
Right.
That whole thing, the demanufacturing of this country over the last 30 something years.
And this cannibalization too that you're talking about. I know a drug detailer, a drug rep. He's got 3 little kids. Everybody wants to do a good job. They want to excel at what they're doing. And a lot of people right out of college, they get sucked in by the corporations. And I don't know who this drug rep, I don't know him well enough to say which drug companies he represents. But when I first found out he was a drug rep, I thought, how could you possibly do this?
Right.
How could you go into these doctors and tell them things that are going to hurt the patients? And how could you possibly engage in such an awful industry? But then we have to look around and say, well, gosh, these people are just trying to do a job. They got hired by a corporation. They believe that they're immediate superiors in the corporation, and they buy into all of the propaganda within the corporation. And
they've been taught this.
Part of it.
Yes, and they've been. It's you know, as I used to say, the more educated you are, the more indoctrinated you are, the more beholden to the corporate system that you are.
Right.
And you become, and that's what it is.
Sure.
And then you become, you know, if anybody like what you just said, if you were open to the person saying like, how could you be a drug dealer? And, you know, they would get quite offensive and say, I'm doing good. And how dare you?
I'm supporting my family. Look at the house we live in.
Right, exactly.
And look how cute my kids are. They're well-dressed and they have a roof over their head.
Yeah.
But at what cost?
Right. Yeah, we're all, they've gotten us to sell our soul, or many of us, just for a dollar, which is an unbelievable subject in and of itself, that we hold this piece of paper in the highest esteem,
sure,
instead of each other.
And drug reps, somebody in the chat room said drug reps make a lot of money.
And
well,
yes, they're usually cute young women also.
And they travel with they collaborate and they they associate with, and they socialize with doctors. And, well, doctors have been built up to be these demagogues, demigods in society. I mean, they know all the answers, and who wouldn't want to hang around with a doctor?
And
take them out for dinner and be able to spend all this money and be an influence.
It's turned, you know, the whole the whole thing about how medicine turned 100 years ago, 115 years ago now, or when it started to turn from into the allopathic model. The whole, like you were saying, cut and drug and burn and that whole model of allopathic medicine, which I myself do not buy into at all.
Right.
The only thing that they do good is, like, if you're in a car crash, they put you back together very well.
Exactly.
That's it.
I don't.
That is it, in my eyes. And anything else that they're selling, death in a bottle and just, you know, they don't. It's just, and here is people that, you know, supposedly take their oath and have all this schooling and you have them. Still, these people are selling their soul to the devil by what they're doing, and they think they're doing the right thing, like with vaccinations or with they're giving you the new drug and you know, it's like I watched a film a couple of years ago, and it was like from the 30s, and the kid, a young boy, was sick at home, and the doctor came in the morning. A house call, huh? You remember those?
Yeah.
And he came in the morning, and then he there was real love and caring about this young boy that was sick in bed.
Yeah.
And then the doctor tells his mother, "I'll be there again in the afternoon." And I was like, "My God, how it's changed in 75 years!" How
right, you get 3 minutes. They write you a script and stop the door.
Yeah, it's just. I took care of my mom in her last 6.5 years of her life, and I saw how these people operate. And it's, matter of fact, they keep you waiting. I didn't care for that very much, especially as one doctor, which was my mom's main doctor, and I finally told her, and she didn't care for it. And they use their excuses. Oh, I had to do this. It's like, what excuse is it today?
Sure.
It's like, how can you keep people waiting for an hour when, you know, nobody else would get away with this type of behavior? And I'm not going to let you get away with this type of behavior. And
I've walked out and said, look, I've got a schedule, too. I mean,
Yeah, I know. I did that in one of her doctors before her last doctor. And she just got out of the hospital and she was waiting an hour. And I got up in front of everybody in the waiting room. I said, the reason why we're all waiting for an hour is because all of you people put up with this.
Right.
And I made a big stink. I made a whole speech and then said,
good
goodbye.
For you.
I'm done. I'm
good
done.
For you.
And I walked out and I said, if we don't stand up, then these people just keep on doing. This is what it is in everything. Is that
right.
People, and they've made sure that, and they know the psychology about all of this stuff too.
Right.
You know, it's very interesting that, you know, if they get the majority to go along, then the minority becomes ostracized and vilified and you're looked down upon and how dare you can't bring that up with proper people and that
right.
type of thing. It's like, or what you were saying about the church and a film about health
right.
and just another perspective. You can't even have that because it might offend somebody or you know, I'm not sure. It's like, oh,
it doesn't matter if it's the truth. It's the and this is the Delphi technique in action, and that came about from the RAND Corporation, and a lot of this stuff that we're talking about resulted from World War II, and before World War II, yes, there were chemical medications. They started like in the 1930s, but then after World War II. Forget herbology, forget homeopathy, forget everything except allopathic medicine, and it became the number one medicine, the number one go-to.
Oh, yes. Yes, and all the other naturopaths, and they were all vilified.
Right.
It was like a 35-year transition or
right.
so from from a mostly naturopathic type of doctors into this allopathic, and you saw how they, you know, they took over the AMA, they started the AMA, and then they took over the medical schools, and mm-hmm. and it was this. When I looked into this a few years ago, I was like, oh my God, it's just how they can just. It's within like two generations. They went from being the people that take care of you and the way you're being taken care of until, you know, it's a totally different system, and it's just not full of love and of kindness, and most people, you know, the interaction with the doctor was what made you well.
Yes.
More than the, you know, whatever homeopathic or even, you know, naturopathic thing they were giving you.
Well, because he cared. He
exactly.
cared for he was interested in helping you to get better, where now the doctors are working for the pharmaceutical industry. They are interested in writing a script for you. And when you go to the doctor, you expect to get a prescription, because that's the way we've been brainwashed. That, well, and especially since they advertise drugs on TV now, that you can go in and ask for
this drug or that drug.
Sure.
And I believe there's only two countries in the world that let
New Zealand and
yes,
America.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so that sort of tells you a lot right there. It's, you know, I wrote this other piece last August, 50 pages of American exceptionalism. And I found just an alarming array of facts that, you know, that we think we're the best. This, you know, we have this illusion still
mm-hmm.
of like it being 1954, I guess.
Sure.
And where in many respects we were the leaders in a lot of things, and now it's the exact opposite, you know,
right.
in almost everything. And
right.
it's such a sad state. And I wrote it, and I was compiling it. I think I even once one of your shows we were on, I did a list of it. Yeah, it was like, my God, And, you know, and there was even more of them I found after the fact that, you know, it's still, oops.
I
oh, my
like
God.
Mine. That's,
yep.
that's all right.
Yeah, it's, and now I like the new phones. They actually talk to you. They tell
right.
you who's calling and everything. Anyway, so it's, it's a very important call, actually.
Did you want to go and get
No, it's all right. I'll give them a call back.
My publisher called right before the program, like 7 minutes before, and I said, "I'm going." He said, "Do you have time to talk?" And I said, "Not really. I'm going on my radio program." And so anyway, yeah. In my book that's coming up, I said people cannot, doctors cannot honor the Hippocratic Oath anymore and practice allopathic medicine. It is impossible to honor that oath and be practicing allopathic medicine.
No, it's not, and it's like that with, you know, I guess lawyers in the bar also, and all these professions. It's you know, it becomes really disheartening when you know as much as we do in a respect to, but you, what, as I was saying earlier, it's, you have to come out and try to put out the solutions. You know, people throughout my whole life were saying, "Oh, Mark, you talk about doom and gloom and all this negative stuff." And I say to them, you know, hold on. It's not because I just like to dwell in that black demonic. It's because if you do not fully understand the subject, you'll never find a solution. And I'm a very solution oriented person, and as I know you are from all of your interviews and the work you've done, it's about putting out information that can empower people and get people to want to, you know, see a different way of doing things. And you know, so many of your guests that are just astounding in the amount of information and that they give out, so people can make better choices in their life. And so it's you know, it's to go in. I guess I'm going to repeat a few things from last week, getting back to the subject that we were sort of talking about. But it's, you know, I'll just pick up at number 14 of where I was and briefly go over a few of them. And it was, which was, not one German government extermination order was ever found. Not one letter from a German soldier about gas chambers or mass killings was ever found. And look, you know, it's just, I find that just when you see, like, as I was talking about before, I have 50 sections that are 50 different sections repudiating the story. So I'm showing 50 holes in the story, so to speak. And each one adds more credence to, excuse me, what their story is saying and what, but it's not. And how could they be saying this when you have this? So it's, and I have actually the 50 sections. There's a few, like three or four, that are like this next one, which is number 16, who started World War II, and you know, Judea declares war on Germany on March 24th, 1933, and that whole thing about the lead up to the war, and it's the inevitability of the war. And if any of your listeners haven't already seen The Greatest Story Never Told, I would suggest watching that unbelievable documentary.
Isn't it remarkable?
I've watched it twice, and I watched it when it first came out, as it was coming out in the episodes, and then I actually watched it three times, and then I watched it straight through, and it's, what, almost 6 hours, I guess? And it's just, and it gets very sad, huh? It really... But it shows you, it's amazing, because you don't see anything like that. And it's just wonderful to see more or less a very fair historical documentary on a subject that, you know, about the most vilified people and person throughout history. It's anyway, kudos to that. And you know, there was there's also Hitler's War, which is another one, and so you have number 16 is The Final Solution, and they've turned this on its head also by trying to state that The Final Solution was the Third Reich's euphemism for extermination of the Jews, and when The Final Solution was really to expel the Jews out of Germany and Europe, and to bring them to places like Madagascar, or the transfer agreement that they had, and put them over in Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
And so that whole, you know, it's just a yet another part of this thing that has been turned on its head, that how could it mean anything but the final solution of the extermination of the Jews, you know, type of and number 17 deals with the transfer agreement, and Germany helped transport Jews to Palestine. And this is what I found interesting. Hitler let German Jews leave even after World Jewry declared war on Germany. It's
exactly, and take all their stuff with them.
Yes, exactly, and take their belongings with them and transfer it into banks that would give it to them, and so you have them being, you know, here's a group that is the most together group in the world, these Jews, and you have them declared war on your country, and so. In all respects, all the Jews now in your country are enemies.
Exactly, and that's why they put the most obvious ones in the camps. They didn't go out and round up all the Jews in the country.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
That's another excellent point, right? They only went after the real, I guess, rabble-rousing leaders.
Right.
That were infiltrating and causing trouble.
Exactly.
At that, and put them in camps early on. And, you know, people, you know, we hear the stories about like Einstein coming over here in whatever it was, 1935,
sure,
I believe, and all of these stories. Oh my God, they're coming to get us all, and this kind of, it's wonderful, and you know, even just the Einstein story, it's sort of like I was talking to a friend, and it's they have all of their. You know, the Oscars and the Tonys and the Grammys and the and all of these
right.
awards, these self-aggrandizing awards for themselves. It's like, and Houdini's the greatest magician, and isn't it funny? And you know, it's funny. I go on Yahoo sometimes, and I keep on seeing this the girl from Friends. What's her name? The Jewish girl. It's oh God. Anyway, she's always like. She's always like in this top 10 thing. It's like, what is, but the way they, this is very overtly in our face, you know, and it was like, I remember seeing like, I don't watch their films anymore. And I don't watch these award ceremonies, but.
Oh, I don't either because that, for the very same reason. Why would I want to, yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, patting. It's saying, look how great we are.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is just amazing.
And we'll let you come up here with us once in a while if you kiss our ass type
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Excuse sure.
me. But yeah, it's just or beholden to us, I guess I should say. I mean, it's and these people like you know we were discussing last week this Brad Pitt type and these all of them though. I mean, and no matter what you're doing, and you know, it's I like older movies, but I even when you look back on these older movies, it's the same. They
mm-hmm.
have a propaganda. They have something's going on all the time in the films. There's a social aspect to it that they want to change. And until your eyes are open, like or until you like they live, until you put the glasses on, you know, sometimes it's not overt. Many times
right.
it's not overt. And I actually wrote about this in something about because I watched Saving Private Ryan again,
mm-hmm.
and I saw at the end they're looking at the crosses in the fields of Normandy, the cemeteries and you see them. The old guy who he saved, Ryan, looking at Tom Hanks' character, you know, the grave.
Mm-hmm.
But you see Spielberg very perfectly does it, puts a Jewish grave marker in the right-hand corner of the picture. And it's just a sea of crosses in the first row right next to where the guy is standing.
Mm-hmm.
You see a Star of David
mm-hmm.
cross. And then you flip the angle. He flips the angle around to show the face of the guy, and the same exact thing in the first row, in the right hand side, is the Star of David again. So, it's like in your face, but yet very nicely done.
Well, the whole thing about warfare. I mean, I don't like war movies simply because they glorify war, and I just. And when I see those Wounded Warrior commercials on TV, I
right.
think, well, okay, you wouldn't be all beaten up and have no legs if you weren't stupid enough to go over there and fight for the Israeli state.
Right.
I mean, I just...
Yeah.
I'm very cynical about it.
Yeah, so am I. I'm to that point, and I have been for a while, that... I... You know, it's... A lot of times, it's the parents' fault, I think, because you know a lot of times if the parents aren't smart enough, you know, because they're a generation older than their child, if they aren't smart enough to tell the child, no, this is, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah,
really bad idea. And all you have to see is how do they take care of their veterans? Oh, let me see what happened with Agent Orange and depleted uranium and you know all of these. How good they take care of their.
Those are clinical trials on how they
yes.
were going to poison the rest of the earth.
Yeah, and how many boys came back, you know. I just missed Vietnam, but I knew a lot of guys that came back, and they were strung out on heroin, or they were totally screwed up in the head, and they just couldn't get right in many respects. And
right.
You know, that's what, you know, war does to you. We're not here to kill each other. And,
exactly.
And yet they have, that's why you have all of these war films, like you're just saying, and all these violent video games and all this indoctrination to now change your soul into, and then, you know, you have the false flag on top of it,
mm-hmm.
to throw in that, oh my God, yeah, look at what these, whoever it is, you know, the Huns or the ragheads or whatever, or the Nips or that whatever, you know, bad.
Well, you have to vilify this group of people in order to get everybody riled up and mad, or you have to kill 2,400 people and to get them to say, oh, look, they've killed an American. The best way of getting Americans to go and fight is to say, oh, look, they've killed all these people.
Yeah, and the people didn't even know, you know, what Pearl Harbor was. Where
exactly.
is it? It wasn't, you know, it was like, huh? Oh, that, don't you remember? That was our first international war. We stole it on the way out to the Philippines.
Right.
You know, and Roosevelt himself should have been hung right there.
Oh, absolutely.
you know, it just, the whole setup of Pearl Harbor is just amazing. And Perloff has done a really good work on that.
Yes,
James.
Yes.
It's as a matter of fact, it was interesting because I was one of my things I was going to write was called False Flags actually, and then he did it, and so I went, well, okay, great.
Yeah.
It, because it did a very good job on going into all of the false flags that, you know, that there were. It's just and that's why I knew, you know, I already knew about them when 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
I realized pretty much the real history of a lot of things. I didn't know everything and that at all. I learned an immense amount in the last, you know, 13 and a half years, but I knew enough that the USS Maine and the Lusitania and Pearl Harbor and the Gulf of Tonkin and the, you know, the 312 babies thrown out of their incubators and
mm-hmm.
all of these stories. So I realized, you know, 9/11, I was waiting for it, but anyway, it just.
And there's always a cover story to cover. What might even be even worse that we don't know about. Like the cover story about Vietnam. Okay, well, maybe it was really about a trial of Agent Orange, so that we could see how it worked on the vegetation in this one little country. Let's try that first there, and then we'll come home and we'll see how glyphosates work in this country on our crops. I mean, there's always something more evil than the initial stories that are put out.
Yeah. I remember listening to John Judge, and he just died last year, and it was a while ago, and I couldn't believe it. But he said his mother was like a secretary for like high up meetings, and they knew exactly. And he said this. He goes, my mother told me that in one of these meetings back in, like, I don't know what it was, 59 or 60 or something like that, that they said that 58,000 boys will die.
Mm-hmm.
In this war. And it was like, what did you say, John? That your mother, that they said this. And they knew all the different aspects of how many people that they'd have to get. And to know the exact death count,
mm-hmm.
it just always blew me away. And mm-hmm. I've looked back at that video again like 2 years ago, and I was like, wow. So there's this strange machine that is, you know, that happened. And the whole, you know, I know you've interviewed the Phoenix Project,
mm-hmm.
and I interviewed him when his book came out, when I used to have my own show, more than a decade ago. And he's a good acquaintance of mine. It's anyway, it's and that's sort of Phoenix Project into our neighborhoods.
Exactly.
So it's like what you were saying with the glyphosate, and it's which, by the way, is horrendous.
Yeah, it really is.
It is, and it's such a poison, and all of these things are just such poisons that you know. I mean, you know, there's this new story that came out about, you know, half the children will be autistic by 2025.
It'll be more.
When I was saying to myself, when is enough enough?
Right.
Even
if you look at the whole history and everything behind the organ transplant industry, and you go back to the original group that decided that they were going to do this, and you think, okay, what is the composition of this group? And there's always this so-called humanitarian front. Oh, we're doing this to help you.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing this to save you. Let us inject these poisons into your body so that we can help you not to get chickenpox. Or here, sign this little card that you want to be an organ donor. It's going to be just wonderful.
Yeah, you'll be helping others. Right.
They don't tell you that in the process of you donating your organs that they're going to give you something to paralyze you while they cut you open and kill you in the process of extracting those organs.
No, that's conveniently left out. When I heard your show on that, I was aghast, and because I didn't know this.
I know.
And I was... I forget who the guest was that you were talking to. It was like a year ago, 2 years ago.
Dr. Paul Byrne and Bernice Jones.
Yeah, I was just, oh my God. Oh, yeah, and her boy, right?
Yeah, right.
And it was
Brandon, 16 years old.
Yeah.
Had signed up at the Motor V.
Yep. It's the whole, we're doing this, like now the humanitarian wars, we're doing it, you know, the colored revolutions, all this. All of what is isn't, and now you know what would you know the total of what's happened to the Donetsk airport and how they're really demonizing Putin and the whole thing, and it's just, you know, it harkens back to, like we were saying before last week, about how they pushed Hitler into going into Poland. It seems
mm-hmm.
like it's the same MO happening again, even though I don't know if Putin, whose side he's on, or if he's playing the game, and it's all, which I think most likely is probably it. He's probably just playing his part in this big game of geopolitics that's run by these elite, overwhelmingly Jewish financiers that control all the central banks. And that's the thing, is this love of money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes back to it. We're loving it. We love money more than we love each other, and that is fundamentally at the root of this problem. And when you can, and out of that you can see, you know, the Roe versus Wade decision, when a woman can abort her child, and they make it okay,
right.
You know you've lost your way. I mean, it's just so many. Or I remember the blue laws changing back in New York City, where I'm from. They had this Jewish guy that owned these electronic stores called Crazy Eddie, and he became he stole like $115 million and ran away to Israel. But he came on, and he was open on Christmas Day, and I was like, oh, and you remember? Oh, that's right, Christmas, not Happy Holidays, which is another whole 50-year slide.
Look at the White House at Christmas time.
Yes.
You see a manger scene or what? No.
Yeah, I see a huge menorah.
Yeah. How did that happen?
Yeah, I point that out to people as much as I can. You know, it's just, I say, isn't that interesting? I mean, that you talk about in your face.
Yeah.
I mean, that's chutzpah at its best.
Yes.
But it's this whole, you know, you're not, one of the mortal sins was you don't work on your Sabbath. And so that was taken away in the 70s also from us, and that you don't have a day off.
Right.
And so this is a, these are like fundamental things that we have seen in our life that are that have changed. And they and the way the insidious incremental way that they got them or got us to change over a generation or two or three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's been our life and we've seen this now that it, and it's a you know for what ends is what it comes down to. Is it, I mean, how much more of a slave can we possibly be? How much more indebted? We're at, you know, in the United States here, we're at our max of being indebted.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's, you know, it's this usury thing, this compound interest, this what used to be in Catholicism 1,000 years ago, almost akin to murder, is now, you know, 25-30% on your credit card. It's, and people don't fully grasp the compound interest. And
right.
if anybody wants to know, if it's very simple, just add up to 70. You know, if it's a 7% loan times 10 years is 70. So it doubles in 10 years. Or
right.
So it's a very simple rule of thumb to understand that their usury game, which, you know, it's and so you have, you know, like we were saying before, you can buy people. And with money or the prestige or if people such as ourselves that they can't seem to buy, they will vilify or all of these. I mean, it comes down to if they have to, they'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And as we've seen with John F. Kennedy and others. And so this is nothing new. This is the way their game is played. But people, you know, people say, oh, I can't go there because they don't want to realize. And I understand they don't want to realize that humans could actually be this demonic type of this whole, which is where we are again with Holocaust revisionism, how they've turned this on their heads about what they did in Russia and then the Soviet Union and killing upwards of 60 million Gentiles and then turning it around and washing that from history, wiping that totally from history, and yet propagating this myth of the 6 million killed in gas chambers by the big bad Nazis.
Right.
So it's,
and
it's
institutionalized, part of our heritage, part of our school system. They made it a holiday. It's a Holocaustianity.
Yes, it's a religion, and
mm-hmm.
That's the reason I put myself out and put this document out. And it, like I said, it's a compilation of everybody's work that I could find in one place to bring it all together. And I knew the repercussions it was going to have because of the repercussions that it has on the people that are in it.
Sure.
By the way, I mentioned Farrisand 12 times and I got an email. It was 10 times that he was attacked. So it's excuse me for adding two more attacks onto him.
Well, you know, he's probably gotten attacked since you wrote the document two
yeah,
more
yeah.
times.
Well, I mean, that's physical attacks. He's constantly and now the comedian over there in France is he has, I forget, like 80 lawsuits in the last couple of years against him and his family, and it's going back to what I was earlier, is that what a double standard. You know, they were just, everybody's out for freedom of speech, how dare they, and then you have 54 people arrested for having free speech. It's like,
see, it's only free if you agree with it. If it's agreeable to the majority of the people, then you can tell the truth. But if the standard pattern has been set, if the talking points have been delivered, if the official version has been delivered, and it doesn't matter what group you're with, what herd mentality group you're with, if somebody has already established the agenda, what they deem to be the truth, you may not disagree with that without getting vilified.
Yeah, I mean, this is the way it is, and it's, of course, to protect one group of people. And it's so blatantly obvious. It's sort of like the Sedition Act during right after we got into World War One, or we were put led into World War One by the Jewish financiers in the Balfour document, and it was just. And by the way, the day we were put into World War One was Good Friday. Okay, let us not forget that. This is done on purpose, and this is once again. This is showing their hand, and they're laughing. This is not a coincidence that we went into World War One on that day. And then you have the Sedition Act and the Espionage Act of 17 and 18, and all of that. That you know you can't say diddly squat about the war. And they took out all different magazines. It was like what Lincoln did, during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same type of things.
Exactly.
And like now they do it in a more subversive way.
More subtle, yeah.
Yeah, more subtle, but very, very effective nonetheless. It's or you have free speech zones, or like I read an article about this new guy that was supposed to kill people in the Capitol and all that last week. This 20-year-old kid that the FBI touted as the new, you know, big terrorist kind of guy. And it's like once again. They set him up. It was total entrapment, and I read an article by Glenn Greenwald, which was very good. It's one of the few Jewish writers I will read because he does put out very good information in many respects. And he came out and he was alluding to all of these other FBI. entrapment cases since 9/11, and how bad it is, and one guy that they were trying to get for 8 months to do something, and they didn't do it until they put $250,000 in front of him, and you know probably made him lose his job on top of it, it's just to what ends to say, oh look at us, you know, look at we, you know, if you wouldn't be safe without us, and now we have these surveillance that is all encompassing, and that's part of what Greenwald with Snowden, and no matter what people think of Snowden, he came out and did what he did, and he's and they want him. So it's like Drake and all these other whistleblowers that were before Snowden. I mean, we've heard about this whole espionage, this whole eavesdropping on the internet. What, since 2003 or 2004 or something?
Sure.
And go ahead.
Well, I think the whole internet was designed to be a better surveillance apparatus, a better surveillance vehicle, because we've all been drawn into it, and we don't know the back doors that were put into that system by, well, for instance, Microsoft and the deals he made with Congress. That he would be able to have this gigantic monopoly. Well, what deals did he make that he would have all of these billions of dollars? And then he was encouraged to.
Yeah.
Use your money this way. Mm-hmm.
They sort of went after him with an antitrust suit a long time ago.
Did.
And
mm-hmm.
I don't know if he would have went voluntarily or not. But they probably made a deal there. Or else he was already on their side. I'm not quite sure. But I remember that antitrust thing and what you're alluding to. And now, you know, and now Obama and Cameron came out and they were saying about, and he used the word patriot in this speech he gave and saying about, you know, it's more or less because some of these big tech companies have started to use better encryption, so the NSA can't break in and all this stuff. And it's a whole bunch of they can spy on us. Like I might have mentioned, after I did my first piece on 9/11 in the fall of 2001, my phone got tapped right away, and it got tapped by going click click, click click, and I told quite a few people. That this is what's happening. They said, oh, you're marked paranoid. And I said, and it would, every like 20th time it would click on the other end. And I said, just wait, you'll hear it. And finally they did and went, oh, now I'm telling the truth. And it was like, but I told people way back then, I said, I know about technology and they may have the way already.
Oh, of course they did.
This was in 2001 that to tap everybody. I said, if they don't, it's right around the corner. And people saying, oh, no. And
no,
we have a Fourth Amendment and we have, you know, oh, God. And I said, yeah, the Fourth Amendment, we have freedom of speech in the free speech zone,
right.
You know. But the way our Fourth Amendment has been taken away is the same. It's the same cannibalization, so to speak.
Sure.
In every aspect of our life. And it's like, but. You know, it's going to lead, and I was saying to myself, I've been saying this for the longest time, it's like, when are we going to have the revolution? And because we're, like I said, for the last 50 years, they've been incrementally taking out the middle class. And I said, okay, you know, they always use the welfare mama or the person underneath you is stealing and
mm-hmm.
all this stuff. And I always used to point out, yeah, the welfare mama is, yeah, there she's stealing and they're stealing here. But I said, the corporations are the ones that's really stealing.
Yes.
You know, they for every $1 that they're stealing, the corporations are stealing like 100 or 200 or 300. So let's put things in perspective here, okay?
Right.
You know, it's like,
right.
but it was all done to make you to divide and conquer game.
Sure.
And don't look at the freaking the big people who are stealing all the money. Look at the welfare cheat. You know, look at that. You know, it's like nickel and diming you to really despise other people. But and I was saying this on a okay, and, but it's not just the you know the black welfare mama who's having six kids. And part of that story is true, so that's how they could sell it. But
sure.
You know, you have then it started growing up the food chain. You know, it started going up into the not just the lower class. It started going into the working class. Then it started going into the lower middle class. Then the middle class. Then, and here you have, you know, by all regards, between 66% and 80% of people in the United States are within a paycheck or two or three of going under.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and
I mean, you could be homeless. Somebody could be literally homeless. If they get fired from their job or laid off, and look at all the corporations that have outsourced their labor since NAFTA went into effect,
and then outsourcing it into the prison systems, which is now corporatized.
A slave system.
I mean, and you have to have quotas for your prison system.
Yes.
The governments are states and federal governments have signed onto these private entities that are listed on the New York Stock Exchange to have 20-year deals with them that they have to have 90% or more in incarceration rates. It's like conflict of interest.
And the judges get money for everybody that they sentence.
In some
courts. The judges actually rent courtrooms.
Yeah, the whole legal, you know, Clint Richardson has done.
Oh, perfect. Wonderful job. Wonderful job.
Yeah, really. Yes. It's on the word usage, just like freedom. And no, it's mind blowing that just the level of the, you know, the whole Freeman's movement also, you know, you go into that whole thing that, you know, we are. You know, you see a capitalization on every government document.
Sure.
And that's your straw man.
Sure.
That whole game in and of itself, I didn't want to believe. And I interviewed somebody like 11 or 12 years, 13 years ago, maybe on this now. And I was like, no way, please.
Right.
You know, because you still want to have this apple pie and Chevrolet.
Right.
And this innocence of no, you know, it's not that bad. And I knew, you know, as I've said before, by the time I was 10 years old, I knew I was in an insane asylum here.
Right.
And because, you know, my president and Meg Revers and Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and the Vietnam War and the whole Catholic Church is condoning it. And Cardinal Spellman, who was my
exactly.
And Cardinal Spellman turns out to be a Jew.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, wonder why he was all for the Vietnam War.
Sure.
It's like, wow. It's just, you know, and then you find out, you know, like, the Jesuits, everybody's saying, oh, it's not the Jews, it's the Jesuits. Oh, wait, who the hell started the Jesuits again? That's right. He was a Jew, Loyola. Yeah. So, you know, and he's a Marano from Spain. So it just, the more you found out about this history, it just, and the subversion of history on all different aspects, then you begin to, you know, question things. And it's sort of like, you know, I don't, it's like you can go back to even Christianity. Is this a front? It sort of gets you going,
I don't go back that far.
I don't
far.
Either do it. I don't like
I
it,
just,
you know?
You know, yeah. I've got enough yeah. to worry about just thinking about the last 300 years or so.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody in the chat room said they've been tapping phones ever since there were phones. Edgar Hoover always told his agents, if you don't want it known, don't use the phone. It rhymes, hey.
There you go. Maybe it's a haiku or it's a limerick. Good old J. Edgar Hoover. The 48 years in power, that man. It's interesting. He keeps on coming up in that piece that I've never finished on John F. Kennedy. It's in so many different ways. Hoover's name is just pops up, him and the mafia and what they had on him and everything. It's just...
Sure.
It's and his friendship with LBJ and you know, LBJ is he got that law reinstated. He got to be a senator in 48 after he lost in 42, I think, in an election, and then he stole it in 48 and in I think it was he in 54 he became leader of the Senate, and this has never happened. And I know I'm jumping all around, but you bring up Hoover, and I think of it, and he brought in that whole thing about the churches and the nonprofits.
Yeah,
I think it was in 53 or 54.
Right,
that whole
right.
thing also. And but when I was digging into the Kennedy thing, and I stumbled upon LBJ, I knew a lot about him, but I didn't know this, is that he became the head of the Senate in, I believe, in the beginning of his second term in 54. And I was like, this doesn't happen. It's sort of like Barack Obama.
Yeah. Where did this guy come from?
Yeah. Where did he come from?
Yeah. Indeed.
I mean, yes, when I saw him at the Democratic Convention in 2004 giving the keynote address, which I know that you're the heir apparent if your nominee loses, I went, wait a second, who is this guy? He's a state senator?
Yeah.
And he's giving a keynote address in the Democratic nomination. And what?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God.
Weird.
Yeah, who is this guy? Oh, that's right. Who's behind him? Oh, that's right. It was that David Axelrod and his Jewish gang that were promoting him. So
people that interviewed him in New York, and I can't remember the date, but before he was ever elected as anything, he had the interview, and he was their man.
Yeah, and now we're going to have a great choice again. We're going to have Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton. Isn't that nice? It sort of reminds me of something in the past.
Yeah.
It's Clinton and Bush. I think I know these names.
Sure.
I mean,
just like you know the Roosevelt names and.
Yeah. Yes. It's and the Roosevelt and it's what was it? It was
Teddy and then
Teddy.
There's Franklin and.
Yeah.
When you look at the
and
families.
Kermit, and Kermit, who started the. Operation Ajax in August of 53 to
overthrow Iran. Yeah.
Yes, and get the oil back for BP and our gas. Yeah, that was nice. That was a nice little first little CIA kind of revolution behind the scenes in Guatemala, and it's just and the whole you know that whole people think that the you know the NSA and the CIA and all of these alphabet agencies, the FBI and this Joint Task Force, and all of these things are here to help.
No, they're here for the wealthy to use for their gain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To spy on all of us, to infiltrate all of us, to tap everybody the exact opposite. And this is it's like. You know, going back to, by the way, is an important thing I was getting to is like, when is this revolution going to happen? And I'm more for an enlightenment, and not because, you know, it's like the Who song, "Meet the New Boss," same as the old boss.
Sure.
And you usually get a violent revolution, and you don't get change because these people it comes back to that whole welfare mama thing. These
sure.
people get to divide and conquer and look over here, look in this hand over here. Well, they're grabbing the power back with the other hand.
Sure.
And this has been like this through all history, that they tend to do this. And if they don't, they'll just form another revolution to
right.
do it. And even if you actually got a change, it's like they were doing it with Rome. They've kept on, or even Egypt, or wherever they go. It's the same modus operandi that they use. But I stumbled upon that it's the threshold for most revolution is when it's around 38% to 40% of the money that you have is spent on food. When it becomes more than 38% or 40%, people say that's enough, and that's the threshold throughout the world that seems to foment revolution and getting on the streets and to change for some kind of a change, and even a violent change. That's when people say enough's enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's and our food, when I was doing American exceptionalism, our food is the cheapest in the world. It was around 10% or something of our, and I know it's going up.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's going up dramatically, actually, in the last 7 years. But it's still extraordinarily cheap compared to, but they're stealing it from every other which way.
Sure.
What you have.
And it's all poisoned.
Yeah, and it's all poisoned, and sugar, and GMO'd, and it's just, and chemicals, you know, it's like, I was looking back on some poetry I wrote. I used to be a poet. I wrote.
Oh, me too.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My first incarnation as a writer was a poet, and I wrote 910 poems, and I stopped writing poetry. 910 poems, and my last poem was written on November 11th, 1998. And of course, I got most noted for 9/11. And I said to myself, my God, what is the likelihood if you wrote 910 poems? And then you did 9/11 work. I mean, just strange stuff. My whole life has been microcosm like that. Strangeness of, you know, it's. But it's more. I want to get into more talking in interviews from now on in my life about more solution orientated aspects of.
Okay, so what is the solution to to talking to getting people to look at the Holocaust in a critical way?
Well,
I mean,
and I have no problem still, you know, even though because, like I said earlier, if you do not fully know a subject, you won't find the solution.
Exactly.
So you have to keep on, you know, if you want to find a solution about a subject, then you better fully recognize the subject, and the solution will come to you. The morphic, I believe in this theory that Rupert Sheldrick puts out, morphic resonance, and it's memory. It's all about memory, and we're finding this out that it's more and more true. And it's they're finding, you know, memory in water, and he just died, bless his soul, really great work, Emoto. It's a collective memory that we tap into that is, and so it's. And like I said before, it's like when you're onto something, when you fully want to understand a subject, and I mean really fully understand it, your antenna, so to speak, will be open to the to this morphic field, which will give you, the universe will give you the answer, the solution.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just, but you have to go in with an open heart, not only with a knowledge full of brain. But you have to go in with an open heart and to be open to finding the solution, not just going in to learn about it, to be pissed off about it type of attitude.
Sure.
It's to go in with, you know, and that's how I began my whole, this whole Holocaust thing with my, you know, 1.5 page disclaimer about, you know, I'm for love and not war. I'm for peace and I'm for not fear and not hatred. I'm for the truth and exposing the truth no matter where it leads me. And so what are the solutions? The solution was trying to write this piece to put out all of the, you know, 65 years or whatever history of revisionists all together to be such an overwhelming amount of staggering evidence that people would say one of them, one of these things would get it. One, you know, like I've said this story before, it's like my sister's good friend that was over in Germany and her husband was a big shot in the intelligence, and she knew German people were so efficient and all that, and none of this stuff got to her, but it was the tattooing and the shaving of the head and the
right.
And that thing.
And you never know what is going to be the key point.
What would trigger? What will be the catalyst? Right? She just knew from being over in Germany that Germans are very efficient people and they would never waste their time in the middle of a war doing this.
Exactly.
And so that was the piece of evidence that was like the aha moment. So, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like number 18. No gas chambers were ever found. No, not one plan, order, photograph, budget, or blueprint was ever found. So or not one body was ever by Dr. Larson, the American's leading forensic pathologist, who was assigned to the U.S. Army Judge Advocates General's Department, and he was over there, and he says, what we've heard in quotes, what we've heard is that 6 million Jews were exterminated. Part of that is a hoax, and he went in and said, you know, he was doing more than 100 examinations a day, and he didn't find anybody that was poisoned by gas. And is any of his pathology is forensic autopsies, and nobody has.
Right.
So it just, well, wait a second. If our top guy and said this, it's. And you have, you know, people, revisionists throughout history, like I said, you know, when the Soviets liberated, in quotes, Auschwitz in January 27, 45, which is coming up to the 70th commemoration, the story, I believe, came out on February 2nd in a Soviet newspaper that the Jews were being they found that they were exterminated in Auschwitz by electrocution. This was the first story put out. As far as I found in that with, you know, forensic expert, you know, forensic, they found that they electrocuted them in Auschwitz. Well, you know, then they diesel gassed them. Then they suffocated them. Then it was Zyklon B. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you had, and like I said earlier, the shrunken heads, the lampshades, the soap, you had an enormous amount of stories that revisionists, that people laugh at now, because the revisionists have debunked them.
Right.
And it's you know.
Because there was, people believed it then. I mean, some of the stories that I've read in the newspaper about that they ground them up and used them to pave roads and all kinds of stuff. I mean, anybody with half a brain would never believe some of that stuff. And yet it was put in various newspapers and nobody said a thing. They took it all. And it's like Elie Wiesel, who said that that when he was leaving Auschwitz that he could see blood coming up from the ground,
squirting
out in a geyser.
Yeah.
Now, who would believe that nonsense?
I mean, you're talking about like over the top, really.
Exactly.
He also said, didn't he, that he could tell by the nationality of the smoke coming out of the chimney?
Yeah, that it was blue or it was green or this or it was. I mean.
And he was always the last in line. They forgot to get him. I mean, it just, these one story after another, after another, after another. And then you have, you know, you have the forensic experts who went there and the three different ones that we've went over about the chemical analysis of the walls of these so-called gas chambers and the gas chambers themselves, the David Cole film about, you know, you see it's not hermetically sealed as glass doors. They open the wrong way. You got to be, they're air raid shelters.
Windows.
Yeah. It's just,
I mean,
wow.
Why didn't they break out a window? I mean, are they that submissive that they go in and they look out the The people
it's not
near
even
the.
That. Deanna, it's not even that. It's the Germans would be so stupid that they don't have hermetically sealed doors that they're going to kill themselves.
Exactly.
Because all the delousing chambers were hermetically sealed, huh?
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid and I was reading this stuff, and they said even the cement, you could see the print of where they were trying to dig cement.
Oh,
a minute, my fingers, I couldn't dig at cement. I'd break all my nails. I couldn't do that to cement. How is it that they were able to do this to cement and leave their their handprints in the cement because they were trying to break through? I thought, I don't believe that.
Yeah,
I was a kid, and
but the outlandishness of the stories, and they have no problem. It's like I don't have the Hitler quote in front of me, but it's like you talk to them and they say one thing, and then they'll just change it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I mean, like right in midstream. They'll just defend one thing, and then they'll turn it on its head to not defend it. It's just, so you're dealing with sort of like psychotic, sociopathic behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And with one of the things that I have, I hold against the Jewish, whatever they are, is that they lack empathy. And this is, and for anybody else, they have a hatred of human race, and that's an overall, you know, overarching kind of big statement. But I'm saying like 95% of them have real problems, and maybe 96%, 97%, 98%. It's somewhere in there that are just I don't know why or how. I mean, there's around 4% psychotic or sociopathic or behavior in human beings, supposedly. It's just that I don't know if it's because of all the inbreeding over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure what has manifested itself in these people being the way they are. I mean, I remember when I was doing this research, that, you know, there was even theories about the whole Neanderthal type of thing,
mm-hmm.
which I found real interesting in a way. And I looked into it, and when I first heard about it, I said this is outlandish. And then I said, well, let me give it and John did, I remember, did an article on it many years ago. And I, you know, and many people have looked into it. And I said, you know, when I started looking into it, I said, it's not as outlandish as it seems, although now you can do DNA tests on it to prove it, which really haven't been done very much. But, you know, we most likely, Homo sapien, eradicated the Neanderthal. And even though we now know they were interbreeding with us and all this stuff, but if you know, if you take a look at some of the pictures of Jews and Neanderthals, there is similarities. Let's just say in many respects. Anyway, it's going off on a tangent of people think now you see he's talking about this whole thing. He's crazy,
mm-hmm.
but nonetheless, the theory behind it is that. If we wipe out, and you know, what the theory is some of them held out in the Caucasus and the mountains and Neanderthals, meaning, and that they wanted revenge because we tried to wipe them out, you know, 12,000 years ago, whatever. And so they have an unbelievable hatred. Now, this is where I was saying that, wow, that makes sense. If we tried to wipe out another hominoid species and eradicate them, then if some of them, we didn't get them all, and they could try to regroup, they would want to get us with every fiber of their existence, which is sort of what the Jews' behavior is.
But
that's the whole thing. Anyway,
but they're brought up to be full of hatred. I mean, we've all watched the movies of the teenagers, the Jewish teenagers in the Israeli state. Talking about how they've got to kill the Palestinians, or they've got mm-hmm. to do this or that. And I mean, we've got kids here in our country that say, oh, we've got to go and kill those Muslims, and we've got to do this and we've got to do that. So they're just as brainwashed by their leaders as we are by ours.
Yes, they are. And that's what I brought up last week about you know, that 89 to 91% of people bought the Osama bin Laden story in the beginning. And,
right.
and that's what I brought up the whole thing about that, that I looked at all these all these polls since the Lebanon 2006 war.
Yeah.
And that you have, but it's a difference. It's many degrees of difference.
Yes.
In the wholesale slaughter of totally defensive people.
Yeah.
And repetitively happening.
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's apples and oranges type of thing. But yet I do understand what you're saying. Yes. The propaganda. And yeah, I feel sorry for anybody, including young Jewers that buy into their own propaganda.
Yeah.
And yes, that is part of it. You know, other people say it's a sound, it's a frequency that you know, you see them at like the Wailing Wall type of thing, that it just goes on and on about the different
the poor me kind of a thing.
Well,
they do play the victim card.
Well, and they have pretty much throughout history has played that same card. That, you know, as I brought up last week, I didn't know, you know, I only knew the last 125 years or so of their history. And although I didn't remember the Civil War, I believe it was Grant that kicked him out.
He kicked him out until he got to be president. They
thought
they were really a good group.
Yes. Yeah. So, exactly. It's
and it didn't take him very long to do the switch.
No, because you know where your bread is buttered.
Yeah.
It's very quick. And let me say once again that another good Friday was the day that Lincoln was shot. And I don't believe that was a coincidence either. Like I said, World War One was Good Friday. It's just... And I know he's a total despot, but it's just... I don't think there was a coincidence there. For some reason that it's... Anyway, it's just... It's so you have... you know, no chimneys to vent or holes to drop in the supposed deadly gas. The Russians built the show gas chamber after the war.
And they're not even the one chimney isn't even connected to anything.
Yeah, I know. They still left the you know, the not hermetically sealed doors with the windows and all of this kind of thing. And we went over the capacity of the crematories, of the ovens.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean that's just for bread.
Let's buy the smallest ones.
Yeah, so we could, exactly
because we don't really. It's just, or the Coke deliveries coming in the air-raid.org ball has put out, and you know, you're showing that you needed vast amount. If you're going to incinerate people and
mm-hmm.
incinerate thousands of people, you need a vast amount because it takes hours to incinerate a body.
And you're not going to put that many resources when you're trying to execute a war and defend your country. You're not going to put these resources into killing people that you already have enslaved in the camp. Okay.
Building goods to help you fight the war.
Exactly. You're going to just go ahead and kill all your laborers, sure.
Right.
Yeah, that's what you're going to do.
And then do it in the most inefficient manner.
Right.
So the most efficient people in the world are doing the exact opposite in the most inefficient manner that is possible during a war. In which everybody in the world, the Russia Jews, the British Jews, led by Churchill, the United States, and even France, you're surrounded by Jewish countries coming after you. And so you're going to do this instead of just, you know, machine gunning them down right where they are.
Right.
I remember one story, they had trains, you know, they were bringing them in by trains, and they had a train station that was like a delousing place.
Right. Yeah.
And
Fritzberg shows this on his website. Yeah, they could have done it there. Why take them all the way to Auschwitz or take them all the way to wherever they're going to put them in a camp?
Yeah. Why
shoot them where you find them?
Exactly. Shoot them where you find them. And that, of course, would be. And don't even dig the grave.
Yeah. Just let the let the other guys bury these people.
Right, shoot them like we did with the buffaloes in 1871, 1872, and 1873. Just shoot them right where they are.
Boom. Yeah.
And let them lay.
Yes.
And I mean, because you're in the middle of a war.
Right.
And so, this is where the whole outlandishness of you know, as I was saying about my sister's friend, this is, it brings it to like three more steps up the ladder.
Right.
The whole inefficiency, it's beyond the pale, actually, when you think about it. And no bodily remains were ever found in around the camp.
No.
It's so,
except the German shepherd that you mentioned.
Right. Yeah. It's and Himmler's, it came out on December 28th in 42, reduced deaths at all costs in the camps.
Right.
And then you have Rudolf Haas, who was the commandant of Auschwitz, and he was doing not so good things, and they got him and they executed him for doing these. Which is really amazing.
But they had to torture him for 3 days to get him to admit that he was doing terrible things.
Huh?
I guess you, if you torture somebody in the basement of the during the Nuremberg trials, if you torture all the people that are going to be testifying, and
I was talking about Haas, not Hess.
Okay.
What they did to the especially the hierarchy of the Third Reich.
Oh,
and then it wasn't really working until they threatened their families.
Mm-hmm.
And then any man will give up.
Sure.
I mean, when you say your women and children, you know, your wife and your children will die in the most horrendous way.
And they tortured him for 3 days in order to get him to admit that they killed all these Jews in gas chambers. Well,
yeah.
if you're being stomped on, if your genitals are being stomped on by
right.
heavy boots and you're being beaten, and if your family is being threatened, you'll say you did anything.
Yes. Yeah. And it's,
you'll confess to anything.
Yeah, except for Rudolf Hess, it sort of was in their face, which is why he got life, and why he never got any parole, where other people that were much more involved.
Right. Well, he was out of the country, and he was sort of, how could they, you know, he wasn't there.
Yeah, it's so you have. You know, the Auschwitz sign says "Work will set you free."
Right.
You know, it's it goes on. The other German camps and the liberation of the camps I have is number 29, number 30. As I mentioned before, there were no gas chambers in Germany proper, or Austria or Alsace in the
right.
old camps, and which the Jews swore that there were. And then the Nuremberg tribunals and the whole, what you were alluding to, how that. And, you know, it was, they were probably 75% to 80% of behind the scenes of Nuremberg, meaning the Jews behind the scenes of that.
Oh, yeah.
And this never happened before, that you had this kind of ex post facto law being put in by the victors.
Right.
In such respect. Usually, I mean, this is brand new kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're going to go back and change what you already did. So we're going to make it illegal, internationally illegal, but it was okay for you to be doing it when you did it. But now we're going to go back and make that all, we're going to change that all.
And make sure that, you know, everything that we did, which was worse, nobody knows about.
Exactly.
It's, I mean, you have, you know, the Supreme Court, Justice Wemo Douglas came in and quote, "I thought at the time and still think that the Nuremberg trials were unprincipled. Law was created ex post facto to suit the passion and clamor of the time."
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and you have this U.S. Supreme Court Justice Stone said Jackson, Robert Jackson, the chief mm-hmm. United States prosecutor in Nuremberg, is away conducting his high-grade lynching party in Nuremberg.
Yeah.
He wrote, "I hate to see the pretense that he is running a court and proceeding according to common law. This is a little too sanctimonious, a fraud to meet my old-fashioned ideas." This is the Chief Justice of the United States.
Yeah. Who didn't even graduate from law school.
Right, exactly. Yes. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
It's... But it's, you know, and there you go, number 34, Jews were not made into soap, lampshades, shrunken heads, et cetera, et cetera. And then you have the Diary of Anne Frank.
Oh, yeah.
Number 35. So you have, you know, and that one was, that's a great story. You know, that's.
Yeah. Let me borrow your ballpoint pen for a minute. I just want to finish this diary that my daughter started.
Yeah, yes.
I got to add a bunch of juicy stuff here.
Yeah, and but to the heartstrings of, you know, a young girl.
Oh, absolutely.
Just very well done. The Jews and their story, the Anne Frank story, it's an excellent sell for this whole narrative of this whole story of the Holocaust. It really, it's like, and the different movies that they made out of and all the references, it's just, wow.
It couldn't have been a little old lady that was saying it or an old man. It had to be a girl with,
a young,
you know, big
young
brown eyes. And,
Yeah, it's just, and then you have number 36, Churchill, Eisenhower, and De Gaulle's memoirs, 7,061 pages, and no mention of any of these killings. So,
they probably just forgot.
Yeah. It's 7,000 pages of everything, but it's so. And you would think, by the way, that they would put that in there. I mean, somewhere, somehow, that would be. So, and Hitler was told, by the way, on January 27th. You have this in stenographer took this down. When the Russians were overrunning Auschwitz, Hitler is told in a meeting that, and he's not alarmed and goes right on to the next topic. So, you know, you would of course think, oh my God, did we dismantle the gas chamber? Is everything cleaned out so they don't find anything?
Whoops. I just went to our call screen. We have a question.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No.
I'm 304. I'm sorry.
Hi.
I didn't. Go ahead, Kent.
Yeah, I've got a couple of quick comments. First of all, you're talking about the welfare mothers. I've always been amused at all the guys, the guys talking about they're losing the middle class and everything. It says, well, they voted for Ronnie Reagan, and Ronnie Reagan was going to take the money away from those black folks, was getting all the money. And well, once he did that way, he came and he took their jobs, too. So I think that's always amusing.
Yes.
And another thing,
you forgot
we were talking
you've been holding on for so long.
Yeah, and you were talking about solutions. Oh, another thing, you were talking about the whistleblowers. There's a whistleblower we're hearing about now so much so that they seem to be persecuting with unreasonably is Jeffrey Sterling, and I just happened to be looking up, and he's one of the very few black CIA case officers. So there's Martin Luther King Day. I think it's mentioned how he's being persecuted, apparently maybe because he's black. You know, the case seems to be sort of from what people say, is kind of ridiculous. But as far as solutions, I've often wondered why we just don't start calling them anti-non-Semitic. You know, they've got this term anti-Semitic, and it seems to have all this power. Well, if there's an anti-Semite, there's an anti-non-Semite. You know, there's a Semite and a non-Semite, and we can just call them anti-non-Semites, and see how they respond to it. And if we can create confusion around the word anti, what's a Semite? And you know, any confusion around that term, and we can create. Of course, we don't have the microphone, but if you run into a situation, well, you're just an anti-non-Semite, and see what they say. You know. I put them on the back foot. And also, as far as, the Holocaust, I had an experience with, you're talking about chimneys. The guy I was talking to a couple weeks ago, and he says he read the book about, you know, he's against all the, you know, all the Jewish influence on NPR and everything. But I asked him about he believes in the Holocaust. He said, well, what about the big chimneys? And I says, what kind of chimneys? So there he probably fabricated the chimneys. But he started confronting me about...
You know what? We're running out of time. We have 30 seconds. But
okay, well...
I want to build a new chimney.
Yeah. Well, you need to confront them, make them prove that 6 million people died.
Yes.
That's indeed. The starting point. Prove 6 million.
Yep. And, well, thank you for your phone call.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry I didn't catch it sooner. I get so carried away listening and talking. Oh, we've got 10 seconds. Mark.
Thank you again, Deanna. And anybody that wants to read about it, go to holocaustrevisionism.com. And I appreciate, once again, the platform to speak about such a third rail subject.
Oh, thank you so much for doing this. Thank you so much. All righty. Thank you, listeners, and thank you, Mark. Bye-bye.
Starts with you and me.
Starts with you.
Starts with you and me.